Hello and welcome to the RT Soccer Podcast. I'm Anthony Pine. I'm very happy to be joined by Conan Byrne and Keith Tracy to reflect on our League of Ireland team's fortunes in Europe. We'll chat about the latest news on the domestic front, and there'll be a bit of transfer talk too as we approach the new campaign in England. First though, Keith, let's talk about Shamrock Rovers. They're away to Sparta Prague on Tuesday evening in the second leg of their Champions League second round qualifier, and they go there trying to overturn a 2-0 deficit. They lost the first leg at Talla Stadium. Goals from Veljko Birmančević and Thomas Wiese was the difference on the night. I don't really want to labour this too much, Keith. It's just you can't get away from the first goal, the nature of the first goal. Now, I understand that teams have philosophies and they're training every day in a certain way and they're setting up, and you can't really just ditch that or abandon that. You commit to it. But I think for people looking at these games and understanding the gulf, I mean, just the players who got the goals, Serbia international, Czech international, they brought on Albania, one of the Albania stars from the Euros started or came off the bench. Haraslan, it's a Slovakian, sorry, came off the bench, who was brilliant against England. So that's the class you're up against. And I think it would frustrate a lot of people to look at that goal and just think, did they have to do that? It just seems so avoidable.
Yeah, I would be in that school of thinking, and with the amount of internationals you just listed off there, I can stomach it. You get beat by a team if they rip you open through a nice passing or somebody puts one in the top corner from 30 yards out. You can hold your hands up and go, look, that was just one of those things. But when you get caught playing out from the back and the Dylan Watts pass, it's very, very avoidable. The player actually jumps. He sees that Dylan wants to play that pass and he jumps straight away. I think if Dylan can see that again, he can open out on his right foot. He can just open out and go and play because the boy jumps and he can play through. But it starts when Poles gets the ball and he plays it into him. It's starting to get a little bit tight, a little bit edgy. I'd have just flicked one over the top and told Kenny to go running after that. But look, I get you don't want to keep giving the ball back to these teams. But that to me would keep me awake at night. It really would. And when you see the highlights, it just gets worse and worse. And, look, I get the merits of it. I know Stephen Bradley, you want to play your game, you want to propose yours, but Sparta Prague are a classy, classy outfit. They really are. And I think Rovers finished with about 40% of the ball. So when they did have it, they were their own worst enemies because Sparta Prague press was really good. And look, Haraldsson, the Slovakia international, when he came on, I thought he really stood out. I thought he looked like a really good player. And they've only played two league games so far this season, Sparta Prague. They're only just starting to get going. I think they're going to get better. And Conan will probably, I'm not sure how he feels about this. I do a lot of commentary with Pats, and every now and then you walk across the pitch, the sprinklers are on, you're thinking, I'd love to be playing today. But my God, I don't envy those Shamrock Rovers players on Tuesday night. Don't despair the Prague, don't to the Czech Republic. I think it's going to be really, really difficult for them. But in terms of the game, I thought they were competitive. Ferrugia, I thought, was brilliant. And Damien Duff this week has been talking a lot about levels in the game. I think Ferrugia is at the very, I love him to bits, but if he wants to go to that next level, and his next level is huge, it's a really good player in there. He needs the end product. So many times against Sparta Prague, he forced out of the midfield, and you're thinking, right, okay, make the right decision, and he would make the wrong one, or he wouldn't hit the target. But he's a player who gets you on the edge of your seat, and if he brings that end product to his game, he goes to the next level, and his next level could be across the water. He's a fantastic player, but look, Sparta Prague are a classy outfit. I don't think you're going to get too many people sticking the boot into Shamrock Rovers because they're a very, very good outfit and they can beat anybody. But I take your point. Sometimes when you can see the goal playing out from the back against a team like that, you feel like you're handing it to them on a plate.
Yeah, they are a classy outfit, Conan. And in fairness, it wasn't a bad performance by any means by Shamrock Rovers. I mean, they did have chances. Ferrugia had a big chance at nil all. Honohan had a couple of chances right at the death. What can they take out of it now? I mean, it's obviously, as Keith says, that's a daunting away leg for them to go over there now. What positives can they take from last week?
Yeah, they played well for large periods of the game. I know they didn't have the ball for much of it, but when they did have it, they tried to do the right things with it. And I'd echo Keith's sentiments about the goal as well. They tried to play out and they played back too many times. And once you keep going back to poles, you have to go long eventually. You can't just keep playing out because Sparta Prague will push and push and be in the box when they win the ball and they score a goal from it. So it's really really disappointing to in terms of the decision making at the back, not to get the ball up the pitch quicker. I've no problems with them trying to play out, but the body positions were all wrong as well. And if it doesn't work, you have to go long. And they just persisted with it, and ultimately they got the Sparta Prague got the goal. Just in terms of the second leg, lads, I think Shamrock Rovers have a bigger game on Friday night against Waterford. I think if they're to go and try and bridge the gap between themselves and Derry and Shells, I think they're going to have to put out a weakened team against Sparta Prague. I don't see them winning the game, even with a full strength team. I don't see them winning that particular game, let alone the go through. So I'd be interested to see the Stephen Bradley set up on Tuesday, to see what way he does set up, because like I say, the next three league games that Shamrock Rovers are crucial in trying to reclaim the title for a fifth time. So that's the way I'd look at it if I was a Shamrock Rovers, if I was Stephen Bradley. My team selection would be very, very important, because I'd have one eye on Friday against Waterford away. They don't win that, I can't see them winning it. I think if they win the next three, four, five league games in a row, it puts huge pressure on the teams above them who haven't been in that position of winning a league title in a few years. So they need to keep the pressure on. If they lose to Waterford, I think it could be curtains. So that's a more important game at this moment in my eyes. And then they look ahead then to either Selje or Slovan Bratislava in the next round of the Europa League. So that's the one that I'd be looking at, Anthony. I think I'd disregard this game completely. I wouldn't be looking forward to it, like Heath said, of going out there and trying to play. But I would give young players the experience of playing in a European game. And I think that'll be crucial to their development as well, and gives them great exposure on the European stage. So that's the way I'd be looking at choosing.
Would you go with that, Keith? As Colin points out there, you know, if they lose this game, they then have a third round qualifying the Europa League against either Selje of Slovenia or Slovan Bratislava of Slovakia. And the winner of that would move to the playoff round, which would guarantee at an absolute minimum a place in the Conference League group phases. So like there's still lots going for Shamrock Rovers here. Is it fair enough?
Yeah, look, this off, I think I can see it both ways. If Stephen Bradley was to play a weekend team, you could totally understand that, as Colin says, one eye on the league. I think Damien Duff referenced it after his game against Zurich, thinking he's going to have to be clever with his team selection now in the return leg. So I understand it, but you know, we've mentioned the amount of internationals that Sparta Prague, how tough it is going to the Czech Republic. You go and put kids out there and you go and get beat 5 or 6, which could easily happen. Even if Rovers put their best 11 out available, they could take a good wallop. And if they put the kids out and they take a good wallop, and you could scare a couple of them, and it would be thrown at Stephen Bradley straight away. You know, you can't be putting kids out in these games. It's too difficult for them. The water was too deep. There might be one or two that are ready and you can rest, you know, a couple, but I'm not too sure. You know, I think that would have to be a balancing act. I think there's some people that would just have to grit their teeth and play the game and get through it. And as Conan says, I think it's a dead rubber. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, people were asking me, you know, what's the main aim for teams within the League of Ireland going into Europe? And I was saying, you know, stay in the toy, make sure there's something to play for in the second leg. And I think with Shelbourne, I know we'll go on to them in a minute, largely it's done. Rovers, literally done. So they're needing miracles now in the second legs to go and make something happen. And I know they're both wonderful teams they're playing against, but the basis of the game is keep it alive, and both were unable to do that. But in terms of putting, you know, the kids out, I don't know, it's very, very difficult. If it wasn't Sparta Prague, if it was a different team, possibly, but you know, these could make you look very, very silly very, very quickly. And the kids going to Czech Republic, you know, it's going to be a hostile atmosphere. Even though Sparta will probably feel they've got the game won, it's still going to be very, very hostile. They'll be chasing shadows for large, large periods. And with those dark arts within the European game, Stephen Bradley will know if there's certain kids ready for the put. You know, I wouldn't be making wholesale changes just because I'd be afraid that it could get really walloped.
Yeah, let's move on to Shells then, Conan, because, you know, as Keith alludes to there, talking about levels, and Damien Duff talking about levels, and he was pragmatic after the game. They were beaten 3-0 by FC Zurich in their Europa Conference League second qualifying round. Like, can you explain to us, can you actually put it in layman's terms, what Shelbourne would have been up against? Because we're used to seeing them really high-octane pressing teams, aggressive, they couldn't get out of their half for a lot of that game over there. They're playing a top flight Swiss team. You know, Swiss football is in a very, very healthy position. And in terms of infrastructure investment and all that stuff, they're absolutely miles and miles ahead of us. But why is it, like, what was so difficult for Shelburne? Just in the most basic terms, what in terms of what they were facing, you're looking at teams that just look bigger, stronger, faster all over the pitch. Is it as simple as that? You're just coming up against better conditioned footballers.
Yeah, you just said it there. You said bigger, stronger, faster, but the term that I would use, better. Better players, better technically, and better equipped in terms of their ability. The weather would have played a part as well, very hot. But I think the biggest disappointment for Shelburne was the concession of the goal after 28 seconds. It probably would have been the last things that Damien says before they went out to keep it tight. And they were unable to do so. I remember I went over, Keith wasn't with Pats at the time, we went over to Legia Warsaw and back in 2014. And again, it was a similar ilk team. And we had to sit in for large parts of the game. We got a breakaway goal, sat in again, and unfortunately we conceded in the 94th minute. But we were in terms of our shape, it was very, very hard, very difficult for Legia to break us down. But if the opponent break you down after 28 seconds, of course you're going to have to open up a little bit more, and you're trying to stay in the tie. Anytime you have the ball, you're trying to get up the pitch. And in fairness, Shells did okay, Anthony, considering the scoreline. I was pretty impressed with how they performed as a team. It was just a disappointing thing, was the goal so early in the game, because it killed it. So Zurich coming to town now this week. I'd see Shelburne just, fans, just enjoy the experience. It's not going to be the last time you're going to do this. You're going to be doing it again next season. So it's going to be a full house of Talcott. I like Stephen. I don't think that Damien will play a full strength team. He has his eyes on the prize of league glory. Huge game next Monday night and against Derry. So that's going to be his main aim now coming in this week. It's not going to be Zurich. It will be Derry, and that's such a huge game, because if they win that, it gives them a great opportunity to go on and lift the title. But they have to look at they. Like Keith said, I get Keith's point in terms of you don't want them getting walloped, but I think they take a league title over of being walloped in Europe.
Yeah, Keith, I mean, I don't want to sound patronised or anything, but like, in fairness, you know, when you do concede 28 seconds into a game like that, like if you come out with 3-0 loss, it doesn't seem that bad. I mean, they are a dogged bunch, Shelburne. Would you go along with the idea that they can sort of take some positives away from that? And it is all new to them. They haven't been in Europe in a long time. Now, you can see the fans are enjoying this whole experience. I'm sure Tolko will be bouncing for the return leg regardless. So, you know, it's hardly doom and gloom there at the minute. They're still going to press away.
Yeah, I think there has to be an air of realism to all of this. You know, 4 years ago, Shelburne were in the lower division. So the fact that they're doing this, they have a big European nights and they're top of the table as well. It really is, you know, it's fantasy stuff. If I'd have said this to you 3 years ago, that they'd be playing Zurich and a team that narrowly got beat by Arsenal last year, you know, they put it up against some of the Europeans' best. So, look, I know people are saying it's a reality check for the Irish teams. It's not really, you know, these teams, you know, Zurich, Sparta, Prague, they're very, very good teams. They're European heavyweights, you know. I'm not saying they're up there with some of the Manchester Uniteds and Arsenals, but they're just below that tier. And I think we can all agree there's a bit of a gulf between the Irish teams and the rest. So, look, we competed well, but you know, it is the basics of the game. If you go and you can see that the 28 seconds, and Damien's interview after was brilliant, as he generally is after games. He said we looked nervy. He said we were taking one touch when we should have took two. We were going backwards when we could have went forward. And before we knew it, the ball was in the back of our own net. And you're thinking in the back of your head, this could be a long night. This could be a really, really bad one. So to come out with 3-0, you know, it's not a great scoreline. It's a bad one, but it could have been uglier. It could have been worse. And they were competitive, they ran around, but it's a learning experience for Shelburne, it really is. And I don't think anybody realistically thought, you know, if we keep it tight, maybe we could get a draw and bring it back to Talca. I don't really think that was ever on the table. I do think they'll get beaten the second leg as well, but again, take a step back, zoom out a little bit and take the whole picture into account. You're sitting top of the table, you won your first fixture in Europe in over 20 years against St. Joseph's of Gibraltar. It's excellent stuff. It really is. And I love the stuff, you know, what Conan is saying is spot on about tinkering with the teams in the second leg. And Damien's thinking that way already. But, you know, the only thing is, if I wouldn't want them to take a wallop. And that's the only thing. But, you know, if you are to weigh it up and think, well, it's a league or a, you know, a dead rubber in Europe and you might lose one or two through a hamstring strain, I totally understand it. So I just think there's a little bit of a balancing act to it all. But I think Damien Duff is such a good manager. His interview was brilliant after. You know, you might be thinking after losing 3-0 to a team like Zurich, oh, we're going to get it in the year here after a poor start. He was the total opposite, you know, bouncing around. I'll take the positives. I can be better. Dave can be better. Everybody can be better. And it is sometimes you get to the top of your tree in Ireland and you're thinking, I'm the biggest, I'm the strongest. And then you go into Europe and you see what big and strong really is and you think, oh my God, I've got a bit of a way to go. So it's all about how the Shelbourne players react now. Do they think, okay, does it, I have a little bit more to go, or think, you know, which way do we go with this one? So it's fairly tough though for Shelbourne. It's been an excellent season, and I don't think anything changes because of one. I wouldn't call it a bad result because of one poor result, you know. I don't think anything changes.
We also, I think, should acknowledge that Irish clubs need a bit of luck when it comes to the draw, Conan. You know, to put it in context, St. Pat's, we'll move on to Pat's now because they had an excellent win against FC Vaduz, 3-1 win in Inchicore in their Europa Conference League game. But they operate, Vaduz operate in the second tier of Swiss football, Swiss second division. Zurich are obviously in the top division. Vaduz are from Liechtenstein, but they play in the Swiss second tier. So there are levels, but regardless, it was a very vibrant and positive performance from St. Pat's. Damien Duff said that Jake Mulroney was one of the best free takers in the world in May. Is he the best free taker in the world? Because that was a hell of a hit at Richmond Park.
Yeah, it was brilliant. He's done similar this season and last season and over the course of his career. And what I liked about it was that the fact that they got the goal and they went ahead. Like in Europe, Anthony, a lot of Irish teams have noticed that when they get the goal, they sit in and they're happy for the 1-0 or 2-1 or whatever scoreline it is. But when Pat's got that goal the other night, they sensed a bit of vulnerability in the deuce and they went for it again. And that's what I liked. I like when an Irish team take risks in Europe, and it worked so well for St. Pat's the other night. How it wasn't 4-1, I don't know. The keeper made an unbelievable save at the death. But having said that, the performance was key after the dismal performance, I suppose, up at the Roy McBride Brandywell on the previous Monday, where they were knocked out of the FAI Cup. On Sunday, sorry. So that was, they needed a reaction. They got the early goal, and then they went again and got the second goal, which was so important for St. Pat's. Because if they didn't start well in that game, I would have sensed the crowd would have gone on their back pretty quickly. They didn't, because the goal went in, and then the second one, and Pat's were comfortable. So I'm really impressed now. I mentioned a few times in terms of their attacking threat. And now with the likes of, with Stephen Kenny coming in, who likes those attacking wing players coming in. So he's brought in Elbazetti, who's I feel is going to be a very good signing for St. Pat's. Mulroney, who has liked to tuck in a little bit, him staying out wide and then getting balls into the box for Melia, who's been under so much pressure for such a young kid this season. They've signed, I'm sure we'll talk about that soon, they've signed a new player in Aidan Keane. So there's more attacking options now for St. Pat's, which they didn't have at the start of the season. And that's where I felt that they were, I think I talked about it last week, is that I didn't see where the goals were going to come from with St. Pat's. I think too many players weren't playing particularly well. A lot of players out of form all over the pitch. So I was delighted to see the reaction to the Derry defeat on Thursday. But it's important that they don't sit in their laurels here. They're well capable of beating them. Vaduz aren't the team that they were last year at all. They've played two games now in that Swiss Challenger League, the second division. They've got 1 point from the two games, and they were beaten on Sunday. So it's a big opportunity for Pats to get through. Where again they'll face probably a very difficult task against an Azerbaijani team, Sabah, FC Sabah. So they won their first leg 5-0. But yeah, it's good things happening in Intercor at last, I feel, Anthony.
Yeah, I mean, look, Stephen Kenny is there for the long haul, Keith. Probably hasn't got like the bounce that maybe a lot of us thought he would initially, still inconsistent. But I guess new managers are always judged on their own signings, the players that they bring in. Elbazetti is in now, and let's talk about Aidan Keane. It feels like Pats need a striker. Like, they need a striker to come in and really be a hit. To hit the ground running and to be a proper success. Like, what chance has Aidan Keane, what chance does he have of being that type of player for them?
I think he's every chance. I think Mason has done brilliant, but for such a young kid, it's never ideal to be throwing a 16-year-old in and saying, that's it, you're going to play every single week. It'd be nice to drop him in, take him out, drop him in. Pats haven't really been able to do that. I know Rory Keaton has gone to Cork, we'll probably touch on later, but with him being out of form, Mason not really scoring goals, although his performances have been good, there hasn't been enough goals on the board, and it's been bogging the team down. They've been conceding way too many. So the fact that Aidan Keane has come in, you'd imagine that he will guarantee you some goals, or he was very impressive when he was in the League of Ireland. I think he's a really good player. I think he's sharp. I think he can run the channels. He can cause problems, and he's a decent finisher. So I'm not sure what Stephen's going to do in terms of formation. Will he stay with a one up front? Will he switch to a two? I'm not too sure. But in terms of Stephen coming into St. Pat's and not having the bounce, I would agree with you. Maybe he hasn't had the bounce that you would expect a new manager to have. But I do think there's circumstances and there's reasons behind that. I think Anto Breslin got a hamstring injury and they were playing Turner out at right back for large periods of the season because they never really replaced Sam Curtis. Solberg has managed to come back from an injury now, and all of a sudden they're playing with a natural right back and a natural left back, which helps immensely. Rogowski's come back from a long-term injury. He looks to be getting better. Redmond has just come back from an injury as well. So I do think that back four will get stronger and stronger, especially the two centre-halves. I think that will get better. I think Anang, last season when he was on loan at Pats, he was brilliant. He's had a couple of little handling issues early doors, but you'd expect him to get stronger. Elbuzetti, the first time I've seen him really live was on Thursday, and I love the way he receives the ball as a winger. Conor will know, being on the right wing, he has this ability to let the ball run past his body and just make everything into a foot race. Even if he has his back to the left back, he will let the ball go across his body. And if the left back gets a little bit greedy and thinks, I'll jump around the other side, he just checks back and brings it on the inside. It looks like nothing, but it's just a brilliant, composed way of receiving the ball. And he does it under so much pressure. And with Mulrain, he's seeming to find a bit of form now all of a sudden. I'm really hopeful that free kick now, and his other goal, obviously scored two on the night, I hope he kicks into a little bit of form. And with Mulrain and Elbuzebi on the wing, you're thinking Aidan Keane as well. It really does whet the appetite. But for me, we need to start keeping clean sheets. We have to be hard at the score against. It's been too open. And I know, Stephen, we like to attack. We like to get all of our players on the halfway line. We like to play front foot football. But if we keep clean sheets, I think now we can say the attacking players will score a goal. They have that about them. So look, I'm not too sure what to expect for the rest of the season in terms of the league. But in terms of beating the Doors, I think I'm more than capable to go and do it. But you know, Pats were very, very comfortable on Thursday night, really comfortable. And then all of a sudden the Doors scored a really scrappy goal, ugly, horrible goal, just bounced into the back of the net, a couple of deflections, and then Joe Redmond scored a header. I think it was the 77th minute and around the 80th minute, and then it's 3-1 and it looks that little bit more comfortable. Probably not as comfortable on the scoreline as people would think. So Pats still have a little bit of work to do. If it does get the first goal over there, it could be squeaky bum time. So I wouldn't be counting the chickens just yet. Although, you know, with it does being in the second tier of the Swiss League, you're thinking, where are the levels? How good are they going to be? I wasn't impressed with them whatsoever, I have to be honest. And I give Pats an awful lot of credit for that. But in terms of it does, not impressed, not at all.
Conor, just a word on Rory Keaton, who is goes back to Cork City. I mean, there's loads of reasons why moves don't necessarily work out for a player. It's something that happens all the time. He is a good player. He's got a, by all accounts, a great attitude. It probably just didn't go as well as everybody, you know, both parties would have hoped. But there seems to be on his end, just a relief to get back to Cork. They are going to be in the Premier Division again next season as well. How would you reflect on his time at Pats?
I felt sorry for him, Anthony, if I'm being completely honest. I think he was completely isolated those early parts of the season when I think the team were and the squad, it was all about defending. It was all about defence and playing the three at the back and the two mid, and the box of midfield. That box of midfield, the two attacking players were more central midfielders rather than attack. So there were times when he was 20, 25 yards away from those two number 10s. And I remember the goal in Derry stands out more than anything when, again, long hopeful ball chased it down and an unbelievable finish past Brian Maher on live on RTE. And I just felt at that time, I was like, right, is this going to be the start of it? But unfortunately, it wasn't. He picked up an injury as well and has struggled since that. So, look, he's gone back to Cork. I think it's a great bit of business for Cork getting that over the line now ahead of next season. They have their striker for next season in the Premier Division. That's exactly what Tim Clancy would have wanted. But yeah, I've felt sorry for Rory this season, I have to say. I don't think we've seen the best of him because the players around him didn't feed him the ball. And when they did, they were nowhere near him, so he could lay it off and get into the box. So yeah, I fell for him, I have to say. But obviously with Aidan Keane coming in now, like Keith said, the two wingers that Pats have, there's been just too many times. I think the last striker that Pats fans will talk about is Christy Fagan. And that's nearly a decade ago now. So Pats need a striker that can
score. To
be fair
though, Conan, Christy Fagan has some unbelievable wingers supplying him as well.
Ah, thanks, mate.
Are you talking about Michelle?
No, with Aidan, I don't want to put so much pressure on him either, Anthony. There's been plenty of times where players have come in and you're expecting big things. A bit like Rory Keating. So Aidan had a wonderful season at Sligo. He got the 18 goals when he came back. But apart from that, he hasn't scored too many goals in the clubs that he's been with. He hasn't had many starts either, though. So if you look at his stats, you think he's got 45 goals and 106 starts, which is pretty impressive. But having said that, 18 goals is his biggest return, obviously, for Sligo Rovers. And then there's a big drop then to his next biggest season. So I'm hoping that it's not that season wasn't a one-hit wonder. But having said that, he's come to the League of Ireland once, got the 18 goals, come back again. Let's see what he can do. But I wouldn't put as much pressure on him to say, yeah, he's going to be the player that will score us 15, 20 goals a season. Let's hope he does. But I think with Pats and most teams, we put too much pressure on players coming back, especially players that come back into the league, because let's be honest, they are given very good contracts to come home.
Yeah, well, it will be interesting to see how it fares out. Pats away to Vaduz on Thursday evening at the Rhine Park Stadion in Liechtenstein. Let's take a look then at affairs closer to home. Keith Tracy, you were at Daly Mount. You had an English stag party one side, you had a German stag party the other, and a game of football in front of you. Bowls won, Dundalk won. What did you make of it all?
Yeah, the first half was okay. I don't think the second half was, you know, sort of drip and drab. It wasn't the best game in the world, but I was really impressed with Ross Tierney. It's the first time I've seen him live. He was impressive. The fans around me were talking about him. The German stag, they weren't sure who they were shouting for, so they were asking everybody around who's the best player that Bowes have, and the majority were saying Ross Tierney, and he scored a brilliant goal. It was a nice little volley. He was making brilliant little third man runs when the ball was on the opposite side of the pitch. All of a sudden, he'd take off running. And being where he was, I sort of had a good view when he would just take off sprinting. So you could see he understood the triggers of when to go and when to run in behind. But both teams are just, they're not where you would expect a Bowes team to be. Dundalk with John Daly coming in, I think they've got an awful lot better. I do think they're harder to beat. I just don't see the goals. I know Daryl Horgan scored a goal, but even that, there was a lot of pinball. There was a ball into the box. It dropped. It hit a couple of shins. And Daryl just pops up and prods it home, and it's 1-1. And they defended well. They were competitive away from home. There's a lot of pluses for Dundalk. But in terms of goals, you know, they just don't seem to have that killer edge. There was times where they were on top and you'd expect them to go and stand on Dundalk's throat, but just don't have that killer touch in front of goal whatsoever. And there's an awful lot of slow, methodical play at the back. They keep the ball and There's times where the Dundalk centre forward is standing with his hand on the hips, thinking, there's no point in me going to pressure. Just, you know, the two centre halves are keeping the ball. I'm not going to bother running. And you're thinking to Bowes, flick one over the top, change the tempo, do something. It's just, it was too slow, too methodical for me. Although, I have to say, it was brilliant. The Jody stand was full. I had to go and stand behind the goal. So they're really well backed, Bowes. They get great numbers there every game, but just lack that killer edge in front of goal.
That there's an interesting story as well unfolding that we'll keep a close eye on with regards to Shamrock Rovers' appeal over the FAI Cup game. Bowes haven't won that game, but it was the presence of Dawson Devoy that has proven contentious. He picked up a red card playing for MK Dons in the EFL Trophy. Shamrock Rovers believe that he shouldn't have been playing in that cup match, that the suspension should have rolled over for that game. Bowes believe that it was the league game, which was against Dundalk, that's when he would have had to serve that rolling suspension. So it might take a little while for all that to be teased out. But I mean, obviously, it goes without saying, if they were actually to get eliminated from the cup, that would be a further blow to morale. But we'll have to just see how that all plays out. Colin, in the meantime, I mean, there's potentially an almighty battle at the bottom of the table in the next month in particular. Bowes play Drogheda next on Friday. And that's a massive game because Drogheda, although they're at the foot of the table, and I think it's fair to say that they're a limited team, you know, and there's not a huge amount of creativity in goals, but they are a stubborn outfit under Kevin Doherty. They're only just behind Dundalk, 3 points, I think, now after Dundalk's draw. So, you know, they're certainly not going to go down without a fight. And if they were to beat Bowes on Friday, then, you know, things start to get a little anxious at Davy Mount for people, fair to say.
Yeah, they signed a very good player in Douglas James Taylor. Drogheda, that he's been pretty impressive over the last couple of weeks. Obviously brought in Shane Farrell as well from Shelburne. And with the players that they have the potential to cause a couple of upsets in the league. Now, whether it'll be enough to get them out of trouble is another thing. I think they'll have to make Weavers Park a fortress over the next couple of months towards the end of the season. Of any chance, I believe. Especially with them going full-time next year, Anthony, as well. It's going to be very disappointing. They just needed to stay up this season in the hope then the full-time football next year and progress. Now, they have massive plans in place in Drogheda for that new stadium, that infrastructure, the state grant. So let's hope that goes well for them. But on the pitch, they performed really well on Friday. Obviously, Waterford had a debutant goalkeeper in Lewis Jones, and it was a night to forget for him after just dropping the ball onto his defender's back, and Franz Pirro just knocking the ball into an empty net. And then Adam Foley with a wonderful clinical finish in the dying stages to make it 2. So it was a great performance from Drogheda. They needed it. I think it's 3 points now between them and Dundalk. And if they beat Bohemians on Friday on the back of that win, sure, who knows what will happen. But having said that, I actually was very impressed with Dundalk on Friday night in terms of their second half performance. I thought they finished the game very strongly. And they had a wonderful opportunity, I think around the 78, 80th minute with Jad Hakiki, when the ball was just played into him and he really should have done better. He should have scored and he blazed it over the bar. And that would have put them 2-1 up with a couple of minutes to go. And with the signings that John Daly has made at Dundalk and the stability, bit more stability there within the team and the club, I feel they won't be the automatic contenders. I do feel it'll still be Drogheda, but you're right, it is going to be a battle. That ninth place is going to be interesting to see who gets that relegation playoff spot. But I do feel as well that whoever gets that will be comfortable because the teams in the first division, second, third, fourth and fifth, I don't believe are capable of beating the ninth place team.
Yeah, Waterford lost Sam Sargent, haven't they? I think he's a fractured hand, which is a blow. And it looks like Asamoah is going to go to Wigan Athletic, who's been excellent for them as well. So a double setback for to those two players.
Just on that, because Waterford were in a wonderful position, on 37 points. If they had won that game at Weavers Park, they were on 40. Not only 4 points behind Derry City in second place, and again trying to cement that place in Europe. Now, I know Shamrock Rovers are to come and we all believe that they'll hit a rich vein of form and at least be in the top three. Well, that's what you'd imagine. But the teams around that area picking up silly defeats like Galway and Sligo, for instance, Waterford and Drogheda, they're the type of results now that you'd need those teams to pick up the 3 points. And Sligo have just been on an unbelievable run.
Sligo, well, let's actually talk about Sligo. Fifth win in a row in all competitions. They've got Galway 2-0, Keith. I mean, it's incredible. It's a funny division, really. You know, it's tight and congested, and anybody capable of putting a run together is going to shoot up the table pretty swiftly. But you got to give credit to Sligo, because they would have taken a lot of criticism in the early part of the season. But things seem to have clicked for them, and they have momentum and potentially could push for Europe now.
Yeah, and it's great, because there was times where they were looking over their shoulders thinking, are we going to be the ones slogging it out with Dundalk and Drogheda? But they've managed to just ease themselves away from that. As you say, they're in a really good vein of form at the minute. And I like the way they go about it. I like John Russell. I spent a bit of time up there on the Liam Buckley, and I got to know him, and he's such a level-headed guy. And you know, he gets so much criticism, but you know, where realistically should Sligo be in the league? I think they're exactly where they should be, just flirting with trying to get into Europe. And look, again, it's they do the opposite of what teams want, and that's what I like about them. It's very basic stuff, but teams back off, they play football, teams come and get them, they try and play behind them, and yeah, they just manage to be able to hit the back of the net, and defensively they shore things up. So sitting fourth in the league, I think, is great. I think people are looking at Waterford again, as Conan says. You know, I think Keith Long will be over the moon. I think everybody's over the moon with what Waterford are doing, even Galway to a certain degree. I know they're falling off the pace a little bit now, but they're a million miles away from the relegation zone. And I always think that's the basics when you get promoted. Stay away from the relegation, and Waterford and Galway has never, ever been anywhere near that, and I don't expect them to end up there either. So even if Waterford lose a couple of games between now and the end of the season, even if Galway, you know, drop down to 7th, 8th, whatever it is, they'll be absolutely fine. And I think that's the number one hurdle to stay in the league. And they both look like they managed to do that comfortably. But yeah, delighted for Sligo. Brilliant club. I loved me a little bit of time up there. I thought it was all behind closed doors. They're a club that could go and compete with the big boys in Dublin, but for one reason or another, it doesn't seem to happen. But yeah, I'm hopeful that maybe they could secure Europe.
Yeah, they're next away to St. Pat's at Richmond Park, where they'll obviously try to continue that excellent form they've been in. Let's have a little bit of transfer talk, lads. The big one is Jake O'Brien. He looks very close, Colin, to a move to Everton. It's an amazing trajectory that he's had, because he left Palace and went to Lyon. Lyon do not want to sell him. They're under pressure, under FFP pressure, to cash in on him. And there's certainly no shortage of interest. Ajax, we're looking at him. West Ham, apparently, we're quite strongly interested. But it looks like it's Everton who are going to get him. First of all, like, what's your thoughts on that as a move for him, playing under some, like, I mean, I'll ask you specifically about this as well, Keith, playing under Sean Dyche. Do you sort of feel that would be a good fit for him?
Yeah, absolutely do. He's the type of character that Sean Dyche would love, I'd feel. Just judging by his interviews, I don't know Jake personally now, but just judging by the character that he is, the type of player that he is, I'm sure the Irish captain as well has given his vote of confidence to Sean Dyche as well. I'd be surprised if Sean didn't talk to Seamus about what he's been like in the international setup. So yeah, I think it's a massive move for him. And just to consider where he's come from, playing for Cork City in 2020, to now potentially playing for Everton in the Premier League in just 4 years later. I think that Crystal Palace would be raging that they didn't loan him to Lyon rather than selling him. Because the year that he's had there has been quite remarkable. He got a winner against...
Tiny fee as well that he went. I think it was a million or something. It was
ridiculous, yeah. And he got a winner against Rennes in a 1-0 victory. I think he scored a late winner against Toulouse as well, in a 3-2 victory away from home, which really gave him that boost of morale and confidence that he's like, yeah, I can play at this level. So yeah, I think it's a great move. The fact that he's got international recognition as well, I thought he should have got it sooner in the season, if I'm being completely honest, rather than later on. But he's picked up his couple of caps now. And yeah, I think, why not move? A lot of people might say, oh yeah, he's had one good year at Lyon. But the potential then to slip off and not perform as well next year, that move mightn't be there for you in the future. So the fact that it's comfy now, grab it with both hands. And like I said, I'm sure he's got the vote of confidence from the Irish captain when Sean Dyche asked.
Yeah, Keith, he strikes me as someone who really is tuned in terms of what moves to make in his career. He's plotting a really good career for himself. You know, he doesn't take setbacks to heart. He's done so well in France, but like, how big a factor do you think Deutsch would have been in all this? Can you imagine if you got him in a room that he would have really sold the idea of coming to Everton to Jacob Ryan?
Yeah, well, I think he definitely light a fire under. He's very, very, very good at motivating and wanting to do things. And I think anybody who spent an extended period of time in a room where, you know, he just has that bit of charisma. And my wife used to always say it about him. He has this presence. He just walks into a room and he commands your respect. He commands your attention without even opening his mouth. Your eyes just are drawn to him. Maybe it's the ginger goatee or the gravelly voice. I'm not too sure, but you just gravitate towards the guy. And look, I think it's a match made in heaven. I really do. And people are probably expecting me to say Jake is 6'6" and he'll aerial duels, he'll battle with people, physical. He can do all of that. Yeah, he can. He'll tick that box for Sean Dyche, because Sean Dyche does want that, but he can pass the ball as well. He's not a bad footballer. And I was really impressed with him the two games I've seen him playing for Ireland. The distribution from him into the midfield I thought was brilliant, although I don't think our midfielders can really handle that type of ball into them, although he's proven he can be the one to fizz it into them. He's 23 years of age. And look, what Conan says is right. I do think some people will say, I think it's 27 games for Leon this season, 4 goals. He's probably one of the most productive Irish players in around at the minute. So look, I do. I think it's a match made in heaven. I think Sean Dyche will get the absolute best out of him. I interviewed Jake O'Brien a couple of weeks ago. He was in Marbella on a family holiday. And it was about 8 in the morning, and he was so level-headed. He's so calm. And he wasn't even drunk, which means, you know, on his off time, he's a real professional. So, look, I think he's a match. I don't like doing this to players. I've always shied away with Evan Ferguson and Troy Parrott and some of the younger lads. But at 23, and given the rise he's had and having spoken to him personally, I think he's a future Irish captain. And that's not me kicking Seamus Coleman down the road. Keep him around for as long as possible. His performances have proven he should stay around for a little bit longer. But I think Jake is a ready-made captain. I think his aura, the way he goes about it, I just think nothing really seems to faze him. And yeah, like I said, I think he's a future Irish captain. I think he's our number one centre-half now. And I think that's high praise given how strong we are in the centre-half department.
But it's his ability, obviously he's a good player, but it's the way that he's responded to how things went at Palace. Like, so I'd imagine it's quite easy, Keith, to tailspin when you get to that a club, a Premier League club, and it doesn't happen for you. And what he's done is kind of take a sidestep, a really smart move to go to Lyon and come back stronger now. It's a real strong position to be so coveted as he is.
Yeah, no, look, I still think it's a big risk. I know there's social media, and you know, you can sort of watch any game you want at the touch of a button. You can stream things. But still, going to France, they don't speak English over there. I know people, that's the basic thing to say, but you're in a dressing room where people are speaking French. You're getting training sessions in French. It's hard. It's going to be difficult. So to be able to proper all that, and like you say, on the back of not having the best time at Crystal Palace, but all of a sudden in a whirlwind, find yourself in Lyon and thinking, there's some big players here. The likes of Lacazette was in the dressing room with him. One or two other really big egos. So for him to be able to knuckle down and think, yeah, okay, I'm okay. I can do this at this level. And like you say, he's not just out there, you know, competing, giving people physical battles. He's playing a bit of football. He's scoring goals. He's very good in both boxes. There's an awful lot to like about him. This is not just a big 6'6" centre-half that just wants to kick people. He's an awful lot better than that. And when people say he's going to Everton, they will assume, oh well, he's ahead of the kicker, because that's the mould people push Sean Dyche into. Believe me, he's an awful lot better than that. And I think we'll probably see that more for Ireland than we will for Everton, because, you know, the circumstances will dictate that Everton aren't as strong as most people within the Premier League, so they will play a certain style. I think Ireland maybe go back to that a little bit, but we'll see what the new manager wants to do. But yeah, I think moving forward, Jake is going to be our number one centre half. Like I say, I think he's going to be an Ireland captain. I think he has everything to really reach the highest level of the game.
But you look at the learning that he's got, even at Lyon over the last year, where Lyon started the season so poorly, and a lot of the players in that team were changed, switched, moved on. But Jake was the mainstay. The manager kept with him, and the learning that he received there, because it was a baptism of fire when he joined, because they were really struggling in those opening 10, 12 games, and they were in the relegation zone. And then to move then and go on that trajectory, upward trajectory in the league, and finish where they finished was pretty remarkable. So I think the learning that he has gained in Ligue 1 last season has been huge, and has matured him even more upon his event is move now to Everton, please God.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's hope it goes well for him, because you know, he is an interesting character, and certainly you can see the potential in Jake O'Brien for club and for country. Another eye-catching move over the weekend was Erin McLaughlin's switch to Portsmouth from Plymouth United. She signed a one-year deal there with the option of an additional 12-month extension. Portsmouth are in the championship, the women's championship, having gained promotion from the Women's National League Southern Premier Division, and they've just turned fully professional. So that, it's an interesting move from Erin, obviously full Ireland international as well. 21 years of age, very good player, and yeah, another Irish player in that women's championship division. We've an awful lot of players operating in that league. It's a good league, so we hope that goes well for her. Just to run through the women's Premier Division results from the weekend: Piemont beat Athlone Town 2-1. Treaty United fell to a 2-1 defeat at home to Wexford. Shamrock Rovers drew 1-1 with Cork City. Bowls had a 1-0 win over Sligo Rovers. And Shells beat DLR Waves 4-0. Shells are ahead of Athlone only on goal difference at the top of the table, and there's a 7-point gap back to Piemont, who are in third. Shells are 9 points clear of Galway in fifth, but Galway have two games in hand. That league always, or very often, goes right to the wire. It's only a 20-game season, so I wouldn't be surprised if it's another last day of the campaign job for that. Could be tight. Just to sign off then, lads, and a story this morning in Variety magazine that they're making a film about Saipan. Steve Coogan will play Mick McCarthy, and a Cork-born actor, Aina Hardwick, is going to play Roy Keane. I don't know if you lads got a call, you know, Ryan Gosling and Brad Pitt to play Conan Bourne and Keith Tracy. Have we had our fill of Saipan yet, or are we excited about the prospect of a film coming?
Is it
out?
A comedy or a horror?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not sure what the genre is. Drama and action. I don't know.
Jeez, no, I didn't see that coming. Now, Anthony, I have to say, but it'll make for good viewing. Yeah, I've nearly had my fill of it now at this stage. But I think I was only 17 when Saipan happened, and I feel like it's come up every couple of weeks since that eventful day and time. But to see a film come out on it now, yeah, look, I'm sure I'll watch it.
It's been exhausting, Keith, but I think just to see Steve Coogan playing Mick McCarthy is, as far as I'm concerned, that's worth the admission fee.
I tell you, I'm sold. I definitely go and watch it. I'm not too sick of it just yet. And like Conan says, I remember being, I think I was doing my junior cert, or maybe just in and around it. And I remember the TV being wheeled in and us being allowed to watch certain games. And that was the tournament that Damien Duff really came to life for me. And that was the fire that was lit under me to think, I want to do what he did. Obviously, I didn't get anywhere near that, but it really did inspire me watching Damien Duff do that, especially against the Spanish. And I thought he was unbelievable. I know most of the film will be about the Roy Keane stuff. I get that. But yeah, it's good memories for me. When I look back, I think of only good things, how far we went in the World Cup. I don't even think of the Roy Keane stuff. And, you know, it's good memories for me, but I'm sure the film will be a little bit different. But yeah, I'd buy a ticket. I'd go and watch that.
Okay, great stuff. We'll leave it there, lads. And thanks again to Conan and Keith for joining us this week. We'll be back again next week for more of the same. Thanks a lot. Good luck.